That song of peace. From the tolls that bind me, it will bring release. Burdens will be lifted that are pressing, so showers of great blessing o'er my heart will flow. Sing to me of heaven, let me fondly dream of its golden glory, of its pearly gleam. Sing to me when shadows of the evening fall. Sing to me of heaven, sweetest song of all. Sing to me of heaven as I walk alone, thinking of the comrades that so long have gone to a fairer region among the angel throng. They are happy as they sing that old sweet song. Sing to me of heaven, let me fondly dream of its golden glory, of its pearly gleam. Sing to me of heaven when shadows of the evening fall. Sing to me of heaven, sweetest song of all. Sing to me of heaven tenderly and low. And let the shadows o'er me rise and swiftly go. Sing to me of heaven as the day comes to a close. Sing to me of heaven, sweetest song of all. When Marshall Keble, who lived to be 90 years old, was an old man, he had outlived his first wife. He had married again a younger woman, and they had a good life together, and she outlived him by many years. He died in 1968, but in the latter years, he sometimes would sleep in a bedroom down the hall from her. One night she heard him call out, she thought, and so she got out of bed and she walked down the hall and she stood beside his door, not wanting to go in and awaken him if she had been wrong. So she listened for a minute and then she heard him again. She heard him laughing and she said, "Marshall, are you okay in there?" And he said, "Oh, yes, I was just thinking about heaven." When is the last time that we even smiled thinking about heaven, much less laughed out loud? Philip Yancey wrote, "It is the strangest thing that 81% of Americans, according to a George Gallup poll, believe in the afterlife, but they never talk about it. Even Christians who sing of heaven only talk about it at funerals." When is the last time I thought about heaven? Sometimes we will spend more time thinking about where we will go on summer vacation for 7 days, maybe doing research and spending hours planning an itinerary, talking about it in our families, but only spend scattered moments even mentioning where we will live forever and ever and ever. Two little boys walking down the street in a cartoon captioned this way. "The way I see it, heaven is a place with no baths and no vegetables and no girls." Well, I know there'll be girls there. Most churches have more women than men. I suppose there may be more girls than boys there. "I guess there'll be vegetables. There's a feast, according to Revelation 19. I don't guess our immortal bodies will need bathing, but who knows?" But we know what the little boy meant by that, don't we? Everything that he did not like about this world, he would not have to deal with in heaven. And you know, this was a garden paradise to start with. God lovingly placed Adam and Eve in Eden. There they had all their needs met. Everything was perfect until the serpent came in. Eve sinned, Adam sinned. They brought the curse upon humanity through their sin, and all others have followed their example and also sinned. And so this world had some things in it that were undesirable from that point. And even now, there's so many blessings of God to be enjoyed here, but so many things that make this world less than desirable. So many things that make us sometimes pause and say, you know, heaven's going to be nice. You know, we won't have to deal with that in heaven. And so this morning, eight things you will never do in heaven. Number one, if you turned on a light today, you did something that you will never do in heaven. We live in a world that is dark half of the time. Many businesses and a lot of residences will pay extra each month to have a dusk to dawn light to dispel the darkness, to push it a little bit away from their business or home, because we don't like darkness. More evil is perpetrated in darkness than in daylight. Heaven is a place with no darkness. For Revelation 21:27 says that God does light it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. Revelation 21:25 says, and there is no night there. We will live in a place where we do not have to fear what may go on when we can't see around us. The Bible does talk about the power of darkness, Colossians 1:13, and tells us that we fight against the rulers of darkness, Ephesians 6:12. But in heaven, darkness has no power because there is no darkness. In heaven, the ruler of darkness has been cast down, and the God of light is the only one that has any influence there. If you turned on a light switch, you did something that you will never do in heaven. Number two, if you locked your doors before you made your way to this place today, you did something that you will never do in heaven. Oh, we watch the news and we find out how many people have murdered and robbed and raped since the last time we watched a news report. We get up in the morning, we find out what evils have been perpetrated during the night, and we rush to deadbolt our doors and lock our windows and arm our burglar systems. We live in a wicked society, but no wickedness will be there. For the Bible says, and there shall in no wise enter in anything that defileth, or worketh abomination, or speaketh a lie, but they that are written in the Lamb's book of life. Revelation, I believe that's 21:29. I like the phrasing of the first part of that. And there shall in no wise enter in anything that defileth. Those are exclusive terms, aren't they? No wise. God says, no way will this happen. That in any way will defile. So nothing there can ever darken our brow. There will be no need to lock those mansions that we will inhabit there, for there is no crime in heaven. The devil has been cast down, and all of those who follow his pernicious ways will not have access there, because the last part of that verse says, but they which are written in the Lamb's book of life, you have to have a passport to go there. And no one crashes the party. Everybody there is there by God's invitation and by God's acceptance. If you locked your doors, you did something that you will never do in heaven. If you passed a cemetery on the way to this place this morning, then you did something that you will never do in heaven. There are two cemeteries between where I live and this building. Of course, there's one just across the street from us, so I suppose that almost all of us passed that one as we made it here. You may have passed a number, depending on how far you came and where you live, an additional number of cemeteries, but there are no hillsides dotted with the memorials of those who have lived before us in heaven. The word death is found in the Bible 904 times. Genesis chapter 3, the day that you eat thereof, thou shalt surely die. Death in various forms, I should have said, including death, deaths, dying, die, and dieth, 904 times. There are 1,189 chapters in the Bible, so that's almost one per chapter. But the next to the last time the word death is found in the Bible is Revelation 21:4, which says, it's read in our hearing, there shall be no more death. In heaven there are no hearses with their lights on, followed by that caravan of loved ones who's going to the silent city of the dead to lay, in some cases, the dearest on earth to them to rest. There's no crape on the doorknobs. There are no empty houses to go back to, where for 50 years or more there's been the joy of laughter and the satisfaction of conversation and the driving back of the loneliness by dwelling with another to whom one has committed life until death parts. In heaven there is no separation by death. There are no tears caused by death. For death is the last enemy that shall be destroyed. 1 Corinthians 15:26. Now this world has death, and in a way it's good because we would never leave this world if we had to leave on our own choosing, would we, most of us? And so it's not so much to be feared as the enemy, although it is an enemy. Paul said, I have a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Far better. Well, that's a very mature way to look at death, isn't it? It's far worse for us because, and for those of us focused on this world, of course, because if we've only put our eggs in this world's basket, then we're leaving everything behind because we can take nothing out of this world. There are no pockets in a shroud. There's no U-Haul behind the hearse. What did he leave behind, someone asked of the rich man? Everything. He left the same thing behind that the poor man left. We all leave it all behind. We don't take anything into this world. We don't take anything out of this world. The only thing that we take out we didn't bring in is our character. And a ticket to eternity. Either in the place where God dwells that we're discussing today, or the place where the knowledge or the influence of God is no longer felt. If you pass the cemetery, you did something that you will never do in heaven. Number four. If you faced a temptation today, you did something you will never do in heaven. Ephesians 6, 12, really 13 through 18 describes the Christian's armor. You know, there's a credit card that says don't leave home without it, but this one is really true. Don't leave home without your armor, because when you leave home, even before you leave home, before you get out of bed, you're entering the battlefield. Would you go onto the battlefield without your armor, without your gear? No, we would take our armor there. For the enemy that we fight is wily and he is dangerous. And he has been at this war a long time. So we put on the helmet of salvation. We put on the breastplate of righteousness. We gird our loins with truth. We shod our feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. We take the shield of faith and the sword of the Spirit. And we go out and daily engage with the enemy. And it is not a battle that is of no consequence. The highest of stakes is what the battle is over, and that is our own soul, worth more than all the world. Matthew 16:26. What would a man give? What could a man give in exchange for his soul? Would you trade the riches of all the world and go to hell for that? No. No, we would take the salvation of our soul over anything in this world. But sometimes, wouldn't it be nice just to let our guard down? Sometimes, wouldn't it be nice just to be where there was no temptation? That's one thing we hear about polishing the pulpit sometimes. or several times this year, it is so nice to be somewhere where everybody's a Christian. 4,000 people, and everybody there following the same Bible, having the same goals, happy, sharing the same life. Heard one say after it was over, it was such a shock to come back home and go to Walmart and see the way people dress in the world when I'd forgotten about that when I was up there for a week or 10 days. But wouldn't it be nice to finally be in heaven where the influence of Satan has not been felt, where there are no temptations? Revelation 20:10 says that that old dragon, the serpent, the devil, is cast down into the lake of fire. He has no passport to heaven. And Revelation 19:10 says that the beast and the false prophet are also cast down, probably representing evil persecuting government and false religions that make it hard to serve the Lamb in the context of Revelation. Cast down, never to leave, never to have access to where we will be. There will be no temptation there. There will be no sin there. So if you faced a temptation today, then you did something you will never do in heaven. Number five, if you saw an old person today, you did something that you will never do in heaven. We daily see the results of living in this world. Our skin wrinkles, our eyes dim, our ears don't work quite as well. Our energy level and bodily strength is less year by year. And then ultimately we get toward the end of life and we may find ourselves even unable to do the simplest things that we took for granted for most of our lives. To get out of bed and go on our own mobility to where we want to go. To be able to feed ourselves, to clothe ourselves, to communicate with others. Ecclesiastes 12, 3 through 9. I think I'll read this to you. I was just going to tell it to you. I think it may be far more powerful to read it. If you want to read along, you feel free to. Ecclesiastes 12. Because here you have Solomon describing the process of aging. And it is so remarkable in the scope of it. And I think all of us can relate to it, especially if we are advancing in years. Ecclesiastes 12. And while I read this, I want to remind you that I'm reading what affects this world, but will have no effect on the body that you will receive when you're on the other side. The Bible says in 2 Corinthians 5:1-6, that if the body of this or this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, a house made with hands, turned on the heavens. That's not talking about a mansion or a place of abode there. It's talking about a body. He says in the context that in this we groan. Have you moved a certain way today, some of you, and say, oh. Or are you sitting in a position now not as comfortable as when you first sat there? In this body we groan because we hurt. We have injuries and we have diseases. But in that body over there, there will be none of that. Ecclesiastes 12:3. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, to get frustrated trying to do something because your hand shakes. And the strong men shall bow themselves. You know, in our youth we're straight as a ramrod, but as we age, sometimes we're not. And the grinders cease because they are few. I don't think I'll be able to eat that because I just can't eat that. And those that look out of the windows be darkened. I can't quite make that out. What does that say? And the doors shall be shut in the streets, and the sound of the grinding is low. And he shall rise up at the voice of a bird. Can't sleep. Woke up last night, never could get back to sleep. And all the daughters of music shall be brought low. I used to enjoy concerts. I used to enjoy music. I used to enjoy, but I can't hear it so well anymore. And when they shall be afraid of that which is high, somebody else, if you don't mind, change this bulb or go up on the roof and get this ball down. And fears shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish. Hair changes colors. The grasshopper shall be a burden. You used to pick up a car battery and carry it across the yard, but now I think I'll have to get a wheelbarrow for that. And desire shall fail, ambition decreases, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourner shall go about the streets, or the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, and the wheel broken at the cistern. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. If you've seen an old person, whether it's in the mirror or down the church pew or in a nursing home, then you've done something you'll never do in heaven. Oh, we'll all be old, but there will be no effects upon the body that we will have there. Number next. If you visit a sick person today, you will do something you will never do in heaven. You know, every week we have somebody from this congregation in the hospital or having a surgery. Every week we announce those that were not able to be among us today because they had some virus or other sickness that kept them out of circulation or in their beds. But nobody ever gets sick in heaven because that's a part of this world. That's a part of the fall. That's the part, you know, in the garden before the sin, there was nothing to defile it. And there will be nothing to defile it there. Our bodies will not be susceptible to germs or to injury or to disease. That would be something that would defile the blessings that God has in store for us. Never sick there. And I suppose that means varying things to the people in this room this morning. Some of us, we nod and we think that's pretty good. But for others of us, we weep to think of it because we dread the next pathology report. Or we wonder if we're going to be able to get over this. Or we know that our days here are more behind us than in front of us. May I speak to your heart this morning and say there's no sickness there? No disease there? No injuries or deformities in the land to which we go? If you shed a tear today, you did something that you will never do in heaven. Revelation 7:17 says, "And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes." I suppose that means that if we arrive with tears, the omnipotent hand of God will brush them from our cheeks. And Revelation 21:4 says, "Neither sorrow nor crying, the former things are passed away." Former things. Maybe we can remember crying when we were on the earth. Maybe we can remember hurting or being sick or diseased while we were on the earth. Maybe we can remember going to funerals while we were on the earth. Maybe we can remember what it was like to be tempted while on the earth. But all those are former things. They're not a part of our existence in heaven. Neither sorrow nor crying. In this world, we have our heartaches. We have our heartbreaks sometimes. But not there. It may be that this morning your heart is breaking. Maybe nobody else knows it. Maybe it's because of a loved one who's hurting. Maybe it's a relationship that is disappointing or non-existent anymore. Maybe it's a financial difficulty. Maybe your body is just turning, not functioning as it did. But whatever it is that's burdening you today, may I say, or remind you of what you've known, that this life is but a vapor that appears for a little while, then vanishes away. James 4:14. The passage that we read in Ecclesiastes called that our long home. The implication is this is our short home. We're only here a little while, and then we're on to the next one. And that's where we live a long time. So if you're sad, if you've shed a tear, and I tried to imagine how many tears would be shed today on planet Earth. 7 billion people's tears. What size bucket would that be to hold all the sadness of the world? But you know, that bucket will be left here when we go there. No tears in heaven, no sorrows given. All will be gladness in that land. I believe that's 8. It might be 7 if I miss one. But I want to take the last 8 minutes, and I did this on purpose, to extend the invitation longer than usual. I want to ask you to use your imagination with me. I want you to imagine this morning that I can credibly say to you, you believe it, that there is a bus that's pulled up in the parking lot since you came in this building. That bus is going to take anyone who wants to go to the airport in Birmingham, where there sits a plane that's fueled and ready. The pilot is in his seat. As soon as everybody's on board, it's going to leave that airport. It's going to fly to an island where these things are true. Number one, if you want to get on the bus, you can go to a place where everybody who lives on the island is healthy. There's no disease there. They've never had cancer on the island. No one has ever had a stroke. No heart disease there. There are no injuries on this island. No one is deformed on this island. No one lacks mental faculties on this island. And further, if you get there and you have any of those ailments, as soon as you step off the plane and on the ground of this island, you will be completely healed of whatever it is that has troubled you. There is perfect health there. Some of you would get up and go get on that bus before this service ended. But then I say to the rest of us, may I tell you a little bit more about the island before we dismiss? Anybody who wants to go, when you get there, all your debts will be paid. You owe no money. Further, when you get off of the island, you will become filthy rich. Every desire of your heart within your possession. Mansion to live in. Food provided, clothes provided, everything that you ever need will be there. Others would get up and make their way to get on that bus. And then if I said to the rest of us, may I tell you something else about the island? On this island there is the fountain of youth. Those who drink of this fountain never age. If you're old when you begin to drink it, the effects of aging will be removed from your body and you will be in your youth and your prime again. The fountain of youth is there and you never grow old. So more people would get up and go out and get on the bus. If I said to those who were remaining, may I tell you something else? Those who live on this island are always happy. Nobody can remember the last time anybody was sad or any tears were shed. Others would get up and go get on the bus. And then I would say to the rest, may I tell you that on this island there is complete security? They don't have a jail. They don't have a police force. There are no criminals there. No one has ever been mugged or robbed, or any other crime against their person or property has ever happened on this island, and never will. Some more people would go get on the bus. And then to the last of us, I would say, on this island, you will never die. You will live for eternity. Immortal. Would you be in the room or would you be on the bus? I would hasten to say, you don't have to go by yourself. The people who are sitting on the pew with you, they can go with you. The people that you love that are somewhere else, they can go with you. That bus is the church. If you come into the family of God and you remain faithful in the family of God, then one day God will deliver His family to everything I just described, but far more. The invitation is yours. You can become a baptized believer this morning. Every sin ever in your life erased, forgiven, a ticket to heaven presented to you, a ticket for the bus to get on the plane. If the bus represents the church, the plane represents death, and the island represents heaven. If you're on the bus this morning, you haven't gotten off, have you? I mean, you haven't become unfaithful to the commitment that you made. You haven't gone back to the world from which you were delivered. If you have, get back on the bus. We'll pray with you and for you. God will give you your seat back. You get back on the bus. Get in the church. And then when it comes time for the plane to take off, you'll be on the plane that will go to the destination that you desire. I don't know the condition of everybody in here, but I suppose that the person that matters the most to you right now, the one that you see in the mirror, you know the condition of that person. Will you come while we stand and as we sing?